When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Are you all right up there alone?
Yeah.
We need someone to watch that thing.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica. This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 7, Chapter 7, The Reckoning. And we have a special guest with us today. It's our good friend, Eric. Welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Hey guys, how's it going? Whoop, whoop. This is
whoop,
Eric.
Whoop, whoop. Eric has never seen Star Wars before. Just kidding.
He knows more than all of us put together.
I doubt that, but we'll see.
We'll see. But Richard and Eric and I all worked at the movie theater together when we were 18, and that's how we got to know Eric. So we've been friends ever since. That was just like a couple years ago, not too long ago. Yeah. And but a lot of you listening have heard Eric many, many times before, and you didn't know it, and that's because of this.
Was that me?
That's you saying brains.
Oh, my God.
I didn't even know that. I'm famous.
Yeah, I've heard that like hundreds of times and had no idea.
That's back when I was begging my friends, can you please call my podcast? Nobody's calling. So this episode, we are going to talk about the latest episode of The Mandalorian, of course. And then at the end, we have all seen Star Wars, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about our initial reaction to Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, and then in a couple of weeks or so, we'll do a full episode on that. But before we get into any of that, we have our Star Wars question of the week, which is, what would you do if you had the Force, and would you be a dark side or light side practitioner? Eric, since you're our guest of honor,
first.
Would you like to go first?
Sure. Anytime I think about superpowers or, you know, Jedi powers or anything like that, I try to put it into realistic terms, and I know myself, and I would be light side, but there's a part of me that would want to be dark side and do some of that evil stuff. But I would probably be light side, and as silly as this sounds, I would jump around like parkour stuff. When they jump and jump up on top of buildings, and yeah, I would be running around jumping everywhere.
Yeah. Seem. Flipping down the street.
Yeah, like exactly. Daffy Duck. Exactly. And I would definitely do some Jedi mind tricks on people, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
You don't
course.
Need to How give me that not? Ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You don't need to charge me for this movie ticket.
You owe me $20.
There you go.
So, dark side. Got it. Okay. Chris, what about you?
Well, I basically feel the same way. Like, I would like to think I would be light side, but... Boy, the dark side is so tempting, but I feel like if I had the Force, I would just make everyday tasks easier, you know, like your phone falls behind the couch, well, Force pull it out, and yeah, that's a good you need to clean a second story window, well, no problem, I can levitate myself up there or whatever and wash it, and it's the little things that would get easier if you had the Force, you know, so yeah. I feel like that's what I would be doing.
I think I would end up going into exile. to escape the dark side, because that's exactly where I would end up. And I would also become really lazy, like Chris was saying. You know, you just, I mean, oh, I want the remote. Just, you know, in your hand. Oh, I want some wine. Yeah. Pour the wine. I mean, never have to get out of the...
You might not even need to get the remote. You could just make the TV change.
Right.
Beep. Right.
Or just Jedi mind trick someone to change it for you. Huh?
Hey. It's a walk. You know...
Get me a beer.
I feel like Rich would be, you know what? That Starbucks barista pissed me off. I'm going to force lightning...
Or for that is Rich, for sure.
I mean, the dark side of the Force is really rooted in anger. Yes, I feel your anger. And I'm probably the angriest one of all of us.
Maybe. I don't know, man. You come off as pretty chill.
Ask my wife.
Anyway.
I love podcasting. That's one thing. I whenever I think of like telepathy, not related to the Force, but it does apply. I always just imagine myself sitting at the back of the classroom, and whenever I'm getting bored, just raise the teacher up and make him spin around.
You were one of those kids, huh?
Yeah. But I think I would do some Jedi mind tricks on some certain politicians.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
That's what I would do. All right, good. That was fun. Let's get into our top three highlights for The Mandalorian Chapter 7, The Reckoning. Did you like it, Eric, in general?
I did. I thought this was the best episode so far.
Mm-hmm.
It
good one to come in on.
Yeah, it tied everything together. You know, it brought a bunch of the elements from the previous episodes all together. And, you know, you didn't know if some of these characters were going to be one shots kind of thing, but they all came back to kind of team up. And I love that. That was really cool.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. I mean, this is what I've been talking about.
It is.
Right? This is when everything started to come together. And it's funny because I feel like, in a way, like, just so much happened. And in a way, like, it felt like it slowed things down a little bit, but arguably more stuff happened. And I was really... really happy with it. So I think it's the best one of the season so far, too.
I could see what you mean about slowing things down, because it felt like part one of a two-parter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But still, but it was great in and of itself, too.
It was, for sure. And like I've been sort of waiting for this almost as the season has gone along. And I think you guys know that some of my... even though I like the show a lot, some of my frustrations have sort of been like, are they spinning their wheels a little bit? You know, they set up this, they set up all these things, and then we get one-off episodes of Mandalorian kind of just doing stuff, but not really contributing to the overall plot. But I think this one does. Oh, well, it definitely does. And so really, really enjoyed it. And I got lots more to say about it, I think.
Yeah. I liked it because, you know, the whole putting together the team thing. Mando's role in this was kind of like what Batman does. He was kind of the thinker, the planner. He put together the team. He was the primary brain coming up with the strategies and the plans, although his plan wasn't that great. But I thought that was cool. It reminded me of like a Batman comic. And then you got to see all the characters use their skills. You know, everybody got their 15 seconds of fame using their skills, doing what they were good at. I thought that was cool, too.
And I loved it, too. And I actually think that because we did have to wait a little bit for it, it made it all the sweeter. But if the episodes in between weren't enjoyable, then I wouldn't be happy about that. But since I did like them, then I just think it's perfect the way it's all panned out.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's get into our top three. Eric, what was your number three?
Let's see. My number three was I like the fight between Gina Carano's character.
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune. Her fight. I was a big MMA fan, and I remember her and when she got popular and seeing her fight, that was just kind of cool.
Does she look much different now or similar?
Because
that was like, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah,
or something?
That was quite some time ago. She never really made it into the UFC. She kind of made the transition into acting before all that. I think they tried to pull her in.
Smart move.
Yeah, to fight Ronda Rousey, but mm-hmm. that never happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it was cool watching her fight, and you could tell that she was a fighter when she was just standing there, and she like switched stances and just kind of, I think, brought a little bit more to her character. I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's a smart move if you're going to have this ex-MMA fighter to have her in an MMA style fight. Her fans know that she's done that. She knows the moves. And I also liked how, you know, in MMA, you tap out. That's how you say you're done. And in this one, you tap, but it's that
it's
turning
the
off the belt.
Little belt
thing,
yeah. They need to figure that out for in real life.
Right. Yeah, I like that too.
Well, and how good is Gina Carano? Like, I'm blown away by how great her acting is on the show. You know, I mean, I think she's just been amazing. So every scene she's in, you know, and maybe it's me sort of being a little bit skeptical of someone who's not an actor coming in to act, but I think she's been amazing. So I've really enjoyed watching her.
She's very natural.
Yeah.
I like that too.
I totally believe her character, you know.
She's super likable too, the way her attitude,
and it fits, you know. She's an MMA fighter. She kind of has that
confidence,
cockiness,
but she doesn't seem like posturing. She just knows that she's got
she had a pretty good record. Her record was 7-1, but
nice.
But she could back up her talent.
But she is an actor now. I mean, she was in Deadpool.
Yeah.
Maybe she's, you know, gotten better over the years.
Why are women that can kick your butt attractive? What is that all about?
Yeah, I don't know.
We can do another podcast all about that,
right?
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, my number three overall just was the episode pacing, really. And as I said a second ago, like in a weird way, I felt like this episode kind of slowed things down a little bit and took its time, but arguably more stuff happened in this episode, I thought, because we had Mando who had to go recruit Kara and then Quill. And then, so we went through all that and we had him have to meet up with Grief and try to execute the plan before things go kind of south. And in between all of these things, we had lots of travel time where they were on board the Razor Crest and they were just kind of learning about each other a little bit more. We had lots of Baby Yoda stuff and we had him using the Force more. So even though like I felt like tons happened in this episode, it was all paced really well. And I think that's one of the things I really, really liked about it, that there were slower moments and there were still lots of action moments. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing just worked really well for me. It wasn't perfect. I have a couple of minor beefs with it, but like generally it was just so great, so entertaining, and it felt really deliberate and paced really well.
I can think of a certain movie I saw recently that could have used some better pacing.
Wait a minute. Are we going to talk about that later?
We're going to talk about it later. Maybe.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's true. Was this episode the same length as the others, or was it longer?
I think it was average, maybe a little shorter even.
Yeah, it's a good observation. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
That's kind of my number three, too, is the Mando putting together the whole team. We got to see, you know, Grief come back. We got to see Kara. What's that? How do you pronounce his name? Quill?
Quill.
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 Quill. Sort of. Yeah.
Like Wheel with a K.
IG-11. Yeah. It felt like the old gang was back together again, especially after a long time.
When he said, or when Cara Dune said, do we have anyone who can watch this kid? And he said, yeah, I thought Pelimoto, but then I'm like, no, she's on Tatooine. It doesn't make sense. Right. Quill is where they're going on Nevarro. So, yeah.
Right here. And they, you know, they had that whole montage, too, of Quill teaching IG-11 after he was put back together and reprogrammed, which is interesting. You know, they dedicated a lot of time to that. So what's his yet to be role in future events? Because he didn't really factor in this one too much.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of questions about how droids work now, that, to be honest, after that.
Yeah, right. That changed a lot. I mean, it kind of opened up a door that you never really thought about in Star Wars with 3PO and all those. I mean, are there, you know, is there way more to it than just simple programming or what? I mean, obviously mm-hmm. it seemed like there is.
I mean, the interesting thing, yeah, they've never really gotten that much into exploring how droids work.
Yeah.
And in one sense, I kind of like that because maybe they just have different personalities and maybe really don't want to get too deep into it because it's not good to explicate it or something, you know, take the magic away, I guess, or reveal that it's kind of, I don't know, that it's not well thought out or something. But on the other hand, if you're going to do that, a TV show about Star Wars is a good place to do it. And it's interesting to me that some of the droids in Star Wars have always just had really bad attitudes.
And yeah, exactly.
Some are really cool. And so maybe we'll find
that's
out a little
that
bit
inherent,
more
about why. You know, and I think that's part of, you know, Mando not liking not liking droids, and it gives him that much more reason if they really have these personalities and they have these inner workings.
Yeah,
that can,
because Queel was saying something like, you know, the droid is droids are not inherently bad or good. They just, you know, take on the characteristics of whoever imprinted them. Or basically, I think what he's trying to say is how they're programmed. And then Mandalorian said, that's not been my experience. So
yeah, right.
He's cast out. Sounds like he's saying, yeah, you can't trust him no matter what.
Right.
But I think probably, you know, a droid killed his parents and that's why he doesn't like droids. That's my suspicion. I mean, we saw droids shooting everyone when he became an orphan, so.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, Mando says that Mando implies that droids have like a innate nature to them, right? He says that it's IG-11's nature to kill things, even though Queel says IG-11 had to relearn everything, like learn to walk and things like that, which develop a personality and stuff like that. So you can't just reprogram them to do whatever they want. So it kind of implies that there's more to whatever artificial intelligence is in these droids, you know, than that we know. So I don't know. But I thought it was interesting because we've never really touched on that, I don't think, in the Star Wars galaxy before.
Sure. I mean, aside from just sort of trying to figure out how droids work, what this does that I am most intrigued by is it sets up this tension because you wonder, okay, is Queel right or is Mandalorian right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've realized that I like while I'm watching the series is I like these badass droids who maybe don't have any humanity and they're scary like Zero. That was one of my favorite things about that episode last week. And IG-11 I liked from the first episode. And so now when he comes in and offers tea and the Mandalorian gets his hackles up and gets ready to shoot him, and you've seen what IG-11 can do, then it's really tense. And so now we're like, okay, is Queel right? Can he be trusted or not? And based on, like you were saying, that they spent so much time showing that training thing, I would assume that IG-11 is going to be part of Mandalorian's crew and this will be explored further on. And I'm totally here for it.
Yeah. Maybe droids have an allspark.
You know, I must admit, I still can't not see Bender from Futurama when IG-11 is like moving around, but
you know that
I'll try to get used to it.
That totally fits. I hadn't thought of that at all, but you're right.
Right, and now the few thousand people listening to this, you're welcome.
Sorry,
it's all right. I'm just kidding. That's really funny. Okay, is it your turn? My turn. Well, let's see. Mine was just a few cool things from this episode, one of which was the fight that Eric talked about. The other one was IG-11. The other one, I just thought that Baby Yoda force choking Kara.
Yeah.
I, for one thing, liked that we've seen Baby Yoda use the force once at a really crucial moment with that mudhorn thing. And then he almost used it again last week, but was interrupted by the Mandalorian shooting Zero in the back. And so when he does use it, is here in a different kind of situation where he doesn't need to. And before you realize what's going on, it's like, oh, shit, is he turning evil? Oh, no, he thinks that she's trying to hurt him. So I just thought that was a really clever way to catch us off guard and to use that again in a way that we weren't expecting. And also it was really sweet, like, yeah, protect your dada, you know. Mm-hmm. and it made me think that his character, it just sort of reinforced to me that he is naive, that he's not wiser than, you know, and just not letting on. He that's a little baby thing to do, like, oh, she must be harming him. Mm-hmm. So that was a cool moment, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think Kara's a fan of Baby Yoda anymore. She didn't like him after that.
I know.
I also like that it's more of a, you know, dark side trait, and that he, you know, with the Force and how they evolve and all that kind of stuff, it kind of puts that into perspective a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, since Baby Yoda's sort of a mystery,
right?
It's like, oh, is he a dark kind of a being? But I think I was looking it up, and Jedi actually in some instances have used that,
right?
But they're supposed to be forbidden to use the choke.
Okay.
Force choke. It's supposed to be a dark side thing, but Jedi can do it. So I think this could easily just be him not knowing any better.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's just physics. If you can rip someone's arms off, you could choke them.
Right. Yeah. Or if you can move your remote to your hand.
Right.
Right.
You guys are all allowed to rip arms off, but no choking. It's not. A couple more cool things. I just like the volcanic landscape. That was something kind of new, and that was cool. And the dragon fight was really creepy because it was so, they were like in a void of darkness, and the dragons or whatever they were just appear out of darkness.
Yeah, it was.
With lots of fire around. Maybe some of you guys might want to talk about that a little more, but I also love seeing finally Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon, because I love that actor, and I loved him as Gus Fring, and he has this presence, and I liked his cool outfit, and it was just a little Darth Vader-y with his black armored chest plate that he had. And so this episode, yeah, it had so much going on, a lot of cool stuff. Amazing cliffhanger where they're up against such great odds, and I'm sure Jon Favreau had a great time cooking up just, oh God, having us go, how the hell is he going to get out of this one? Which is a great feeling to have it at a cliffhanger. And then just the sadness of, I think, losing Queel. And I feel like I kind of want him to be dead, not because I really like the character and I'd love to see more of him, but it just gives it more weight if he's actually dead. So that's, you know, like Walking Dead, it's harder when you lose a character you love. And if it's more like comics where they just come back next week, then it feels kind of frivolous and low stakes to me.
Yeah. I'm pissed off that he's dead, but I also want him to stay dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he was very quickly becoming a really likable character, I thought, and one of my favorites, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then he's killed off, and I'm super bummed. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of good storytelling, I guess. And I'm upset that he's dead, but I also don't want him to come back alive for dramatic purposes.
These are the kind of moments when you look back at at episodes or TV series and you're like, remember when, you know, Wheel was killed, and it's something that you talk about. It's something that you think about, and I want him to be alive. I love him, but if he's gone, then that's cool.
Yeah. Too. What's wrong with you guys, man? I want him to be alive.
I really like him a lot. I think they did such a great job with his character. And there's some characters that if they died, I would be like, what? No. Like Yoda, Baby Yoda, I mean, or The Mandalorian. I think that's about it. If either Everyone one of them died, I'd be like, I'm not so sure that was
Mando's
a great choice.
Dead?
But I like Cara Dune. And if she had died, I would have probably been more upset, but still like, whoa, bold move there. But it hurts even to think about that. So yeah, I get both sides of it.
Totally.
Okay. Yeah, he was his mechanic too. Now what Mando's going to do? Who's going to fix his ship?
There's other mechanics out there.
It feels like everywhere he lands, there's a mechanic to fix his ship.
Exactly.
So he's doing all right. Yeah.
Chewbacca's still around.
That's true.
Maybe.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, Eric, number two.
Number two. My number two was Yoda with the Force choke. And I agreed with a lot of what you said. I mean, we already kind of talked about it.
Anything else about that?
Not really. I mean, it was
cool. Did you wonder if it meant he had some darkness?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I always wondered how that worked and you know, how
if he'd like start shooting lightning bolts at him, then,
that might tell you where he's going for sure.
And he starts going, meh.
Yeah, for sure.
Chris?
Well, this might be a funny one, but I thought the plotting of the episode, the plotting plotting of the episode was odd at times because, so we start and Greef proposes a plan to the Mandalorian, and that is bring the child back to Nevarro and we'll use it as bait to get close to the client and then kill him. And then we find out that Greef's secret plan was to kill Mando and take the child, but he couldn't do it after what happened after the dragon attack at night and when the child healed him. And so they devise a new plan, which is to use the child as bait to get as close as they can to the client and kill him.
Yeah.
Which kind of seems like the same plan to me, but I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit different, but I just thought it was funny that they had one plan and then something changed and they ended up with the same plan. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I thought it was a great plan and I was entertained watching it, but it was weird plotting of this episode. And I don't know what you guys thought, but it seemed like they didn't really change up the plan at all as they went along.
Yeah, that was my number two, too. The whole dragon bird thing. It was unexpected. It was creepy. It was awesome. And but, you know, that was a vehicle in the plot to allow, you know, Baby Yoda to show off some of his force healing. And then it gives a nice plot twist, like you said, Chris, with Greef deciding to side with Mando to get it through. But, yeah. You know, that was a dumb plan in the end.
Well,
when they got there, what was their plan? Just to get in? Because the guy was like, hey, let me see the baby. And they're like, oh, no, what do we do now?
The plan was to get close to him and kill him. And then Greef said once their paycheck was gone, they would all scatter.
Yeah, but, I mean, they still had to kill the guy first.
I think it was partly because there were so many troopers in there that originally there was four. But as they were talking, you know, more came into the room. And this was before, you know, even the outside troopers even came in. And they realized that it had to change.
But when the client wanted to see Baby Yoda,
right,
they all freaked out and like, oh crap, we didn't think he'd want to see the baby.
Well, that's also another little thing is that they were like whispering to each other and I kept saying, how are these stormtroopers not hearing like, them? Yeah, they're like standing right next to him and they're like, there's a lot more than we expected.
Yeah. I think that might They did it at the gate to the city, right? Where he made the comment about putting the helmet on his wall.
Right.
Whispered then. And then they did it when they were like right in the client's lair. Yeah.
If you put your hand over your mouth. This, then no one can hear you.
What? Yeah. What?
See?
Yeah. My point was just though that I thought it was funny that like Greef proposed one plan to him, which was similar, which was like a lie, right? Yeah. And he was going to kill him, and then they ended up with the same plan anyways.
Yeah.
I think it was funny.
Yeah, because Greef said something like, I'll get you close to him and you'll kill him. But I don't think they really worked out the details of how, but they did say use Baby Yoda as bait. So you're right. It was pretty much the same plan. Yeah.
Well, I think part of it was that Greef was going to get all the reward.
When they thought Greef was on their side, he came up with this plan, but it turned out he was going to double cross them, kill Mando, give Baby Yoda to the client as a reward, I guess, to get back in his good graces. But then when he decided to be back on their side, I think they pretty much just went back to his first plan. But it did feel like they thought they were coming up with something new, but they really weren't.
Right.
I thought it was pretty funny when Greef said the child is a carnivore when he was being fed. He's like, hey, look, the kid's a carnivore. And then when he was trying to force heal him, he's like, it's trying to eat me. What were those dragon things called? Do we know?
Well, you know what? I thought they were supposed to be Minox, which is the same thing that attacked the Millennium Falcon when it was inside the worm thing on that asteroid in Empire, I think. But I'm not so sure because they seemed a lot bigger and a lot more vicious.
The Minox,
maybe they were just more mature ones. I don't know.
Yeah, they looked like they had different mouths. You know, these had actual dragon-looking heads. Yeah. I kind of thought that they were maybe baby crate dragons, but the crate dragon's way too big. The skeleton in the first Star Wars where C-3PO and R2-D2 are walking through the desert and you see that skeleton in the background.
Yeah,
they could have just been new creatures, right? They could have just been new creatures that we don't know of yet, but I don't know.
That's what Wikipedia says. It says unknown creature.
Oh, okay.
Grief there. He's got 9 lives, doesn't he? How many times has he almost died?
Yeah.
And then brought back to life?
Twice.
So 7 more.
Good answer.
Okay, let's see. My number 2 is about the different motivations of some of the characters. When we first saw Mando in his ship and he got that message from Grief, I for a second thought, oh, maybe he's having second thoughts and Baby Yoda is more trouble than he was worth and he's just going to take him back. But it turns out that he just wants to kill the client because he knows that, you know, he's experienced all these hunters coming after him. He knows that won't stop until the client is dead. So that's his motivation for taking on all this risk and going back. Cara Dune, now she didn't really want to have anything to do with this. She was like resisting. But as she agreed to help as soon as she found out the target was an, as they say, imp or imperial. So I guess that was enough for her just wanting to take vengeance against this guy.
Yeah, I didn't really like that Cara Dune.
Yeah, she changed her mind really quickly.
Uncooperative. Right. I guess that's consistent with her character, though.
But yeah, then she was like, I'm going in with you. And I'm like, wow, that's really like. She's so supportive. It seemed a little bit like, really?
A big 180 right there.
Yeah. Quill, now he agreed to go. He didn't want any pay because he's made it clear he was an indentured slave, which basically means you need to be a slave for a certain amount of time and then win your freedom. All right. It sounded like he paid for it with work, but he's, you know, not happy of having been an imperial slave and he doesn't want Baby Yoda to be an imperial slave. So he says he wants to make sure the old ways are gone forever. So that's his motivation. Baby Yoda, it's interesting. He's always like instinctively trying to heal people. He tried with Mandalorian a few episodes ago and now with Grief Karga. So he just seems to want to do good, except when someone's threatening Mandalorian, and then he wants to choke them.
Pretty simple. He didn't want to go on this mission. Remember, he went up to the cockpit and tried to turn the ship around.
I was wondering that if that was more intentional than him just being a baby. Because
there's more to this kid,
dude.
He was watching. You know, he was hanging his head down upside down while they were discussing that, and then all of a sudden he starts messing with the controls. I think it was a little more deliberate.
If you took my son Bodhi and did exactly the same thing would happen,
right?
Except you'd crash and die.
Yeah. Which I thought was so hilarious. Yeah, he'll be fine up there and you'd have to go in. Did you see how many buttons and switches he had to flip? Yeah, it would have been more with Bodhi.
what's this
yeah,
what's this?
Seriously. What else? IG-11, now I loved that. Yeah, he had to relearn everything and I thought it was so funny when he just, this is horrible, but especially when he dropped that big thing on top of the little creature, he's breaking all these vases and stuff. But his motivations are, you know, if we take it all at face value, it's just to do what his programmer programmed him to do, which is to make tea and second meal and be helpful.
Unless he's got a soul.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's going to kill. I don't know. It would be almost more interesting if there was some of the old IG-11 back in there.
Well, you know, my first thought was when we saw Queel on the ground smoking was that IG-11 shot him.
Oh. Yeah.
That was my first impression, but then you saw the...
Yeah.
Well, it's yeah. Scout it could trooper. Be.
Yeah,
it
I don't be. Think so. Yeah, I mean, but, you guys you could be right.
But I wondered, too, like, they made a point, or Queel made a point of saying that he's not a hunter anymore, but he'll still protect us. And then he didn't factor into that final scene when Queel was almost there.
Yeah, you would have thought that he would have been out there, at least close enough to possibly help.
Yeah.
Right, to possibly help. But and I don't know, maybe he did, and maybe we just haven't seen it. But I feel like they set that up and didn't really pay it off because they made a point of saying he would protect and he would stay in the ship. And he was so close. I feel like that IG-11 would have jumped out to help, but even if it didn't work, you know, he should have been there.
Yeah. So, like, when I'm reviewing anything, there's always two sides to my brain. There's the part that's, like, how I would want things to be if I was there or because of my emotional connections with the characters. And there's the part that what I think would make the better story. And the first part, what I emotionally want is for IG-11 to be incredibly helpful and to be their friend. But I think it would be more interesting if he ended up being malevolent somehow.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Greef Karga, he wanted to double cross them, but then he was convinced. It was interesting because when the baby Yoda healed him, when the child healed him, my first thought was, oh, that's a sign of his value, demonstrating his power, and maybe he's going to change his mind and want to kidnap him or something. But then there was that double cross, and it actually changed his mind to actually want to help them. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Kept me guessing.
I was just thinking about Queel now. He kind of put to rest the whole idea that Baby Yoda was a clone, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he said...
He doesn't look engineered.
Yeah, he's too evolved. Right. He's not ugly enough. Or no, he is too ugly.
He is too ugly.
Engineered.
Said nobody
not
ever.
Not like this one. Not like Kara.
Yeah, now he was suggesting that Kara is a clone, though. He said that she was...
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Manufactured or something.
I miss Queel.
Cave or something. He was so great.
I have spoken.
The client, now I really like this. The client says to Mandalorian, it's a shame that your people suffered so, just as in this situation, it was all avoidable. Why did Mandalore resist our expansion? The Empire improves every system it touches. Judged by any metric, safety, prosperity, trade, opportunity, peace. Compare Imperial rule to what's happening now. Look outside. Is the world more peaceful since the revolution? I see nothing but death and chaos. And, you know, my first reaction to that is, well, yeah, that's, you know, this extreme order comes at the sacrifice of freedom and not everyone's prosperous and many are subjugated. But I love that they had him say that because Star Wars is often just like, there's good guys and bad guys and there's no, you know, they're just evil. But most people don't actually think of themselves as evil. They feel like they have good reasons for doing what they do. So I like that they kind of gave some color to why anyone would want to do that, want to be on that side. And it is interesting. It does. I mean, you do start thinking about it. Like,
it fleshes out the bad guys. It makes them more believable and understandable.
When he said, look outside, it's just chaos, my first thought was, yeah, because you made it that way.
He didn't see it like that.
And then lastly, Moff Gideon, he really wants the child very badly. He says, you may think you have some idea of what you're in possession of, but you do not. It means more to me than you will ever know. So, man, that's just a big mystery still. It's the big mystery of the show. But I'm definitely intrigued.
Explain
for sure.
What a Moff is. What's a Moff?
A Moff is they rule a particular sector, and then they're ruled by, the higher up in command would be the Grand Moff.
Uh-huh.
So each Moff controls a sector.
So are they like a general?
I think the generals are below them.
Yeah. Oh, below. Okay.
They're above generals.
It's like a kind of like a governor, although there are governors in Star Wars too, but.
Yeah,
it's like a political figure that has charge of a sector of space.
Yeah, I guess.
It's basically a military rank, right?
Yeah.
A military rank. So
it is, but in the Empire, military and political are the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Are the same thing, right?
Yeah. Okay, Eric.
So this is a little weird, But one thing that I love about this show is all just the little things that kind of point back to some of the old, you know, the first three. But when I saw the troop transport come in and I saw that was a toy that I had and I absolutely loved it. I would stick my little figures in there and we would drive around and they had the little gun on top.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And that was a toy that, you know, had never been in any of the movies up until
really?
Now. It was one of the first vehicle that I think Kenner made that didn't have, you know, an appearance in the films, and I loved it. And there's so many just little nods, you know, throughout the whole series where I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool. You know,
yeah,
like,
all the callbacks,
right? Exactly. Yeah. And then some of these characters, like the droid that was serving drinks, that too, I had that little action figure and I loved it. So seeing all those things that, you know, not only point back to the original series, but all the action figures and toys were just, it just makes it so cool for me.
Yeah, it was.
This show does a great job of bringing in stuff and using it that exists in the universe already. They create new things here and there, but if you look it up, almost every alien you see, we've seen before,
yeah,
somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
The transports, the types of troopers,
but
and
it's
all
little,
that.
Yeah, little things like even the little screen that he has in his ship,
right?
Very similar to the targeting, you know,
with the 80s computer. Graphics,
right? Exactly. You know, all those little things. There's just so many little Easter eggs that I just love.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my number one.
Awesome.
Well, you know what? Mine is similar, really. I like the final sequence from the moment they arrive at the client's lair until the end of the episode. I thought was amazing. Just I loved everything about it. You know, there was tension. It was exciting. You didn't know if Quill was going to make it back, and they were on the radio with him. And you guys have kind of touched on it a little bit, but like we got some information about the Empire's expansion and then how Werner Herzog, the client, says, you know, everywhere the Empire went, it made things better, which is not a point of view that we've ever really had before. And I really appreciated that, you know, and when you look outside, it's all death and chaos now. So yeah. What has really changed? And I just thought he was so good at these scenes reminded me of how good he was in the earlier episodes, because, you know, the client doesn't say, can I get you a drink? He says, can I offer you a libation to celebrate this closing really cool. of our shared narrative, you know? And that was like, honestly, in other stuff, that would probably be kind of cheesy, I think, but he did it so well that I totally bought into it.
Yeah.
So I really loved it.
I was a little disappointed that he was shot right away, you know, when the action started. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's been so good. Although, you know, I don't know how long he could really survive going forward in the show, but for the time we had with him, he was amazing. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And I think a show like this could continue to bring in amazing people like that for short stints.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Bring in some, I mean, I hesitate to even call them cameos, but like bring in amazing people to do stuff like this. And we just all totally buy into it. But then, you know, when just before Moff Gideon shows up, we have Death Troopers, which are the Black Storm Troopers, which are freaky and awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know about you guys, but I had never seen a TIE fighter before come in and land with folding wings like that.
Or you stole my number one.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, but it was so cool.
Wasn't it though?
I think that's a thing that exists in Star Wars, but I had never seen it before. And I was like, oh my God, that is awesome. You know,
yeah.
I loved it so much.
I love spaceships. I got several models and iterations
right
of it. Yeah, it's and then watching it, you know, function like that, I was like, yeah, like Eric and his trooper carrier. I was like, I've never seen a TIE fighter land. And then even when the guy rose up like on an elevator platform to get out of it too.
Yes. The only thing about that was, though, he comes, like, TIE fighters seem a little impractical in that way, where the top opens and then people come out and then cut to them on the ground. Like, how did they climb? How did he climb down? But whatever. I can totally let that go.
He jumped and all the stormtroopers caught him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, that was pretty much my number one, too, was the ending. I enjoyed the ending, everything about it. The cliff end, the, you know, especially the cliffhanger part of it. I was like, whoa, what's going to happen next week? But having all the stormtroopers gave it kind of a movie feel almost to it, having all the stormtroopers show up like they did in all the movies.
I wonder if they'll have another Deus Ex Machina.
A what?
You know, where he gets saved.
They might.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Well, you know what? We can live for the next week before that happens and think this is going to be amazing, you know? So,
you know what's going to happen is there's some, we haven't seen what's inside the little pram. I bet you there's something inside the pram that's going
to
help them.
Yeah, I was thinking that there was a bomb or something to turn the tide.
Yeah, because remember the client wanted to see the baby and they all freaked out. Like, what do we do now? Yeah. So we haven't actually seen what's inside the pram, the little child carrier.
Interesting. I didn't even consider that there might be anything else in there, but you're right.
Yeah, that's how they're going to get out of it, I tell you.
Yeah, you're right. We don't need to watch.
Yeah. We'll just skip next week.
Yeah, forget it.
Okay, I'll do my lore and callbacks. I like saving this one for last because then if you guys cover any of it, I don't have to say it. So the guy fighting Kara in the beginning in the cage match thing
with the horns
is a Zabrak, which is the same species as Darth Maul from Phantom Menace. And many of those ended up becoming rebels against the Empire, so they're not all like bad guys.
They covered a lot of them in the Clone Wars. Yeah, it was really cool.
The Mandalorian trying to convince Cara Dune to help him, saying, "I have a ship, I can bring you there and back with a handsome reward." That is reminiscent of Leia to Han, "You will be rewarded handsomely," Luke to Han. And even just hiring someone to do something is, some, you know, goes back to them hiring Han in the first place.
In a bar, even.
right. When Quill, talking about IG-11, says, "I recovered the flotsam and staked it as my own in accordance with the Charter of the New Republic." The Charter of the New Republic is this document outlining the principles of the New Republic's government, as agreed on by the Galactic Senate, and it has multiple passages, including one declaring that no person should have to answer for the crimes of a parent, and I think that's because Senator Leia Organa helped write it.
Oh. And makes sense.
Let's see. Quill says he thinks Kara, we talked about this, was farmed in the Sido caves of Nora, and as far as Wikipedia knew, that was the first mention of that, but it sounds like a genetic engineering / cloning thing. Greef has this crew of three bounty hunters that we saw. One of those was a human. One was a Nikto, which was seen first in Jabba's palace.
Yeah, in Return of the Return. Jedi.
And then there was a Trandoshan. Do you know what that is? It's a lizard-like creature, and who we saw that was one of those.
Greedo? No.
Bosk.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
One of the bounty hunters that Vader hired along with Boba Fett and IG-88 to look for Han Solo.
Nikto Virata.
Force healing we saw. Now, that hasn't really been seen much in canon continuity. The Star Wars Uprising mobile game, which deals with the aftermath of Battle of Endor, apparently had it. And there's another thing that had it that maybe we'll talk about later. pretending to bring in the Mandalorian as a prisoner reminded me of Luke and Han, just as stormtroopers bringing Chewbacca in as a prisoner. Fake prisoner. We saw the scout troopers, which I always love. And we saw some kind of chintzy speeder bikes a couple of episodes ago, but this time we saw the same ones that were on Endor. They're called 74Z speeder bikes.
Really? And they're awesome. Yeah. I love those speeder bikes.
Me too. That's the thing I want from Star Wars. The bartender droid at the clients is an RA7 protocol droid, famous for having unpleasant personalities. We saw one, I think, in the bowels of Jabba's barge with C-3PO, the bug eyes. it kind of was reminiscent of Zero from last week because it has the bug eyes and a similar looking mouth, but it's a bit of a different design. Gideon pilots this, what Wikipedia says is an Outland TIE fighter that has those panel wings that are retractable, and they're also solar collectors apparently. But that's the first time we've seen one of those as far as Wikipedia knows. So we've never seen one with folding wings like that. I had some stuff about Moffs we've already talked about, but one thing is that I read by year five of Palpatine's rule, there was a fixed number of 20 Moffs. So if that held, because we're in year nine now, or nine after the Battle of Yavin anyway, then that means, you know, that Moff Gideon here is one in very few company. So he was very, very high up in the ranks.
He had some nice clothes.
You mentioned those black stormtroopers are called Death Troopers. That's an elite variant of stormtrooper designed for stealth, espionage, and lethality. They serve as protective details and bodyguards for significant Imperial officers, which would fit here. Hopefully they're better shots, I would assume.
Yeah.
Now, were they from the movies or?
They're from Rogue One.
From Rogue One.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. They accompanied Governor Will Huff Tarkin to Scarif. And it was in a book or something where it said they were named by Emperor Palpatine as Death Troopers to capitalize on rumors about this legendary advanced weapons research project to revive necrotic tissue, which ultimately resulted in the creation of uncontrollable undead troopers.
Whoa.
I think that was actually in a game. You had zombies.
Stormtroopers.
And they look cool, but I always still think that so far Mandalorian is the coolest looking one on screen.
Yeah, that helmet right? is just so, and it's so amazing.
A few more. The comlink that Queel gave to Mandalorian is like the one that C-3PO had in the Death Star to talk to Luke.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They're all dead. Queel dying, if he did die, that reminded me of Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen.
Oh,
that,
okay. With the smoking
corpse. Yeah, smoking corpse and like, oh, shit. Let's see. That's all I got, on that. Yeah. So we also have a section, I don't think I told you this, but at the end for any random notes, is there anything else you wanted to mention that you didn't get a chance to talk about?
I don't think so. Well, how about this? I don't know if this was just me, but there was a moment when Gideon was on the holocron thing, or the hologram thing, and he waved. Was that just him shutting off the stream? It almost looked like Force-related.
You know, he was telling the troopers on the ground to start shooting.
Okay. But, so he was, like, projecting from his fight, his TIE fighter.
Because he says, the baby's sleeping. The client says, the baby's sleeping. He says, we'll check again.
Uh-huh.
And then he motioned for his troopers to start shooting.
How did he know that?
I don't know. But that's what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, he did that wave, and I had a slight, a brief, thinking that he may be Force sensitive.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, we don't know how he knew that, and I wouldn't be surprised if we never learn, but it is, you do wonder.
Like, yeah, I mean, he looks like he's a badass, and he's got the armor. Oh, and one thing, I went back and I looked at that end the end scene with the young bounty hunter and the assassin, and I'm pretty sure that it was him that came up to her corpse.
Gideon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it was a cape, kind of had the same kind of boots. So I don't know if there's going to be some sort of tie-in with that.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, they can't just leave that dangling.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, they haven't gone back to it, and you know what? That's a pretty good theory.
He had a cape, and he had, he had boots that were very similar, so.
Nice.
There you go.
Cool.
Okay, that's good.
I would have never made that connection.
No, I was still trying to figure out who that was, right? If we know them or not. But this that makes a lot of sense. That
we thought it was Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, we were hoping.
Just kidding.
Poor guy gets no love anymore.
I went back and watched that scene again, and it almost looked like he had spurs on. But maybe that was just me. I thought I heard a clinking.
Chris,
I've got a couple. Mando at one point, well, when he's sending Queel back to the ship, he says, what does he tell him? To turn on the ground security protocols, and then he says that nothing on this planet will breach those doors. So, right. Like, I want to hear more about those security protocols, because they sound pretty badass if nothing on the planet can get through them.
Unless there's Jawas
except for
on the
a bunch
ground,
of Jawas. Yeah. That can right. dismantle the whole
that
ship.
That was my thought. Like, you should have turned those on when you were here before. And when they landed, someone said the volcanic landscape is littered with Jawas.
Right. Why not turn them on all the time? It just seems like the thing to do, right? If they're that good.
Man, he's forgetful.
But yeah, I would want to see that too. That sounded really interesting and cool.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, you know, I thought there was a quick shot when Kara was putting the black cloth over her tattoo to disguise herself. I mean, she has got some serious pipes, man. I was impressed. I was impressed with those arm muscles I saw there.
Yeah. And her character got a little more interesting because she had said before it made it seem like she's not doing her work for the New Republic anymore because it got boring. But now we know she has bounties on her head. So we don't know the whole story behind what she's been up to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I hope she sticks around for a while, right? Like whether she's... Yeah, sure. With Mando all the time or not, like she's definitely got some interesting backstory to explore. And then I don't know about how you guys feel, but do you feel like it was a little bit of a missed opportunity when he does go back to Sorgan to pick her up that there wasn't a scene with Omera, the woman that he seemed to have a connection with when he was there, right? It felt like a bit of a missed opportunity, but
that was weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. It was so long ago. He barely remembers her, I guess.
He's over her.
I thought that they would have something. And when they were first flying in, I noticed the landscape, and I was positive that that's where they were. And I thought that there would be something there, too. Yeah.
I just expected a quick scene of him, like, saying hi or something. You know? I don't know. But
it was definitely a connection.
Right, exactly. And maybe it was something that ended up on the cutting room floor. I don't know, but I don't know. It seemed like something that they should have done, but at the same time, he was there for one specific purpose. They got it and they moved on. So
she couldn't find a babysitter.
I could also see him just wanting to make a clean break too. Maybe. not in a callous kind of way, but just in a way that's respectful, you know,
don't get,
she would be a distraction.
Yeah, and just, you know, not to like lead her on or something.
Right. I'm sure that's what the Mandalorian is thinking all the time.
Rich?
No, you guys got it all. I have no more notes.
Okay.
Sadly.
You know, it's not a contest.
Everything's a contest.
I had a few. Let's see. When Grief said they're ready to pay a king's ransom for that thing when he first saw Baby Yoda. And that was pretty tense when he was like picking it up and everything. And then he said, must be for some kind of highfalutin menagerie. I didn't know what he was talking about because my vocabulary needed expanding, but did you,
that's
you know
a zoo.
That
yeah. It's like a collection of exotic animals, right?
Aminals.
Yeah.
Aminals.
I love an exhibition of aminals.
Aminals. That's what they call him in the Star Wars galaxy.
Right.
When the client, Werner Herzog, was admiring the Mando's armor, I'm like, that's technically still yours, you know, because he didn't really fulfill his mission when he got that for payment.
That's true.
That's what I was thinking. Queel finally said his name, which was great. First time he said it, he said, I have a name, it's Queel, but maybe that should have been a sign that he would be gone soon. I was trying to listen when I watched it again for his last words, hoping it would be, I have spoken, but it was not yet when they asked, are you back to the ship yet?
Not yet.
He said it just before they showed him on the ground.
I have spoken. My last word.
I noticed that Mando's helmet really reflects things, like when they're in the whatever that area, the bar or whatever it is where he met Kara, you could see the ceiling, the roof and everything. And I'm like, man, they must have a hard time with that filming, not getting cameras in there and stuff.
That's true. Right.
I wonder how they manage that.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing a bunch of lens flares coming off his helmet.
And then last thing is, it's, you know, when Greef Karga killed his bounty hunters, there was a part of me that was like, maybe could you just told him the plan changed?
Right.
You know, I changed my mind. Nah, just might as well just kill him.
Right. Six shooter style.
Well, they started to draw their weapons, right? And so they were at that moment where they were going to go with the original plan. But yeah. Greef Karga turns around and takes them out. But you're right.
Maybe
it's like,
he shouldn't
you know
have procrastinated.
Guys? Right.
Right. I'll give you an extra 10 shillings. Huh?
I kind of wanted, I wanted Mando to maybe have a gun on them as well as Greef. I was a little disappointed that, you know, they pulled their guns
get to that point.
On him. But they still would have been toast if he hadn't have, you know, blasted
again.
Them. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. I think that was great. Good coverage, guys.
Woot woot.
We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
It knows no motivation, no sect or organization. It knows no one religion or political belief. Have a cup of tea. Have a cup of tea. Have a cup of tea. For Christ's sake, have a cup of tea.
All right, this week in Mandalorian news, I must admit, guys, I didn't come across too much because a lot of the news this week is focusing on the release of some other thing. And, you know, there's a lot going on there. So there isn't too much Mandalorian. But I do have a couple of items here. And one is that retailers are now taking pre-orders for Baby Yoda toys. So
are already in.
Nice. If you want to get your orders in, you can start doing that on Amazon and other places. You know, I read an article from a website that was a financial advice website, actually, that was saying that you actually might want to invest in stock with Hasbro, the toy company, right now, because they're the official toy partner for Disney and The Mandalorian. But I also want to say that please do not take stock advice from this podcast. we are in no way qualified to give stock investing advice, but that's what this article was saying. Hasbro is the company that's releasing them. All kinds of Baby Yoda stuff is coming out over the next little while. A good chunk of it, not until May of next year, 2020, but you can't order it now. But one interesting fact I took from this article was that Hasbro has a bunch of their own products, but they also have these partner brands, which includes Star Wars and Marvel stuff and Frozen, you know, licensing. And that accounts for 27% of their sales, which may not sound like a lot, but if you think about a company, you know, trying to sell stuff, and if suddenly like 27% of their sales went away, that would be a huge chunk of their revenue. So it's interesting for me anyways to think about how Hasbro relies on Disney partnership for that big a percentage of their revenue. But I don't know. Hopefully, I'm sure it won't go away and people are going to be buying Baby Yoda stuff for the foreseeable future. And you can too, if you want.
Yeah,
I was going to get, I mean, they have a really cool Mandalorian action figure and I was going to get it for Bodhi, but it doesn't deliver until May and
right.
I'm just not sure he's going to be interested by then. So I think I'm going to wait and then there probably won't be any left.
Right. Then the like back order will be until September next year or something. So
this is weird. I mean, have we ever had to wait for merchandise before?
That, you know, that is
the first movie
Star Wars. That's true. Yeah. There was a whole line of action figures that didn't come out. They gave kids a little piece of cardboard that had all the pictures on them.
I blame Amazon.
But we tried to order some on Amazon and actually one of my other family members tried to get one from Disney.com and you could only order one. You couldn't.
Really?
That's good.
Oh, wow. Order multiples, but you could go on Amazon and get the same one and order as many as you wanted. However, you know, they were all going to be delayed.
Yeah, it's going to take forever to get some of this stuff.
Yeah.
The other item I have here, the only other item I have in the news this week is that there was an article on the Washington Post, which was titled Baby Yoda is what capitalism would look like if an economic system were cute, which is a funny title. But it's kind of a difficult article to summarize without reading the whole thing. But it's more or less about Baby Yoda's power to influence us as consumers because he's so cute.
Yeah.
And a couple of quotes I have here from the article are the first one is, "Nothing so brain-meltingly popular could be so benign. Born of the multi-billion-dollar industry unto itself that is Star Wars, Baby Yoda fits neatly into the category of, as Vulture puts it, adorable little Star Wars creatures you are now contractually obligated to love."
Yeah. Yep.
Baby Yoda was made to be made and sold, effectively the tractor beam towing your money to the house of mouse. Which I thought was a pretty good quote. You know, it's like, this is just designed to separate you from your money, which is okay. You know, that's fine. That's what
it
do.
Is. Like, there's a tenor to some of these articles saying, don't fall for it. But I'm just like, these are entertainment companies meant to make things that we like. And when they do, we're like, oh, you got us. It's like, no, thank you.
It's like, go ahead, fall for it. Like, it's fine, really.
Yeah. I mean, if it doesn't work, if it feels like pandering or something, then I don't want it. But in this case, exactly. I'm like, yeah, that sucker's cute. He fits into the story really well. It doesn't feel shoehorned in too much to me. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Disney psychologists.
They sure know what they're doing. This next quote kind of gets into that. It says, "If this sounds at all sinister, I dare say we're selling the little guy short. Baby Yoda is not only greased to go viral, not only perfectly primed for merchandise, but the way he makes us feel also crystallizes the beliefs that maintain our present economy. He is lovable and terrifying," writes New York Times television critic James Poniewozik. Adding, he may well grow up to be our master. Poniewozik is almost there. Baby Yoda could hardly be more powerful than he is now, ensconced in his space pram, manipulating the force with his tiny fingers. It is not capitalism that sustains Baby Yoda. It is Baby Yoda who permits capitalism to persist. Baby Yoda is our master, and he never need make a single sale. So it's a fascinating article about how, you know, people are kind of manipulated into buying things and buying into things as well. So, you know, I recommend it. It's on the Washington Post, and you should be able to find it if you search Baby Yoda and capitalism.
I mean, I wanted to get one of those Ashy Slashies too. So,
Totally. I'm surprised I don't have one already.
I know, me too.
Set them on the shelf
next to Baby Yoda.
Diabolically opposed to each other.
Well, you know what? It's the time of the year. I don't know if this is a thing all around the world, but there's this Elf on the Shelf thing that people do at Christmas.
Yeah.
We got one.
Well, there you go. Why not do an Ashy Slashy on the shelf?
On the shelf.
Yeah.
And a Baby Yoda on the shelf.
Baby Yoda, totally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank
that's
you,
it.
Chris. Cool.
No problem.
All right. Let's do listener feedback. Just go in the same order.
Okay. This one is by Elizabeth Nikolaevich. OMG. Murdered Quill. Looks like he's dead. And they took Baby Yoda. How could they do that at Xmas time? Taika Waititi voicing IG-11 and directed the finale. Guess we'll get to know more about Baby Yoda and where he fits in the bigger world.
Yeah, I forgot. We haven't even mentioned that, but Taika Waititi, who directed Thor Ragnarok, which is awesome.
Yep.
And What We Do in the Shadows, is voicing IG-11 and directing next episode. And so that's great.
I didn't know he was directing next week. That makes me very excited because he's great.
Yeah, he is, totally.
Yeah, I think he's nominated for Jojo Rabbit, too.
Oh, right, that too. I got to see that. All right, Mark McBurney writes, solid episode yet again, and as adorable as Baby Yoda is, and this may be blasphemous, but I always wanted his part to be a little less and a little more about Mando. That said, it was awesome to see him use Force Heal, and more importantly, Force Choke.
Yep, for sure.
Paik Allen says, "Oh, wow. What an episode. Bringing the gang back together, giant poisonous desert dragons, and an emotional and exciting cliffhanger. Next Friday can't come fast enough. At least I'll have Rise of Skywalker tomorrow night."
Todd Hill says, "Dang, what the heck is going to happen next? Episode 8 is going to be crazy. I like the episode, but the end was a total downer. Where the heck was IG-11? I'm still in shock, and I don't know how this season's going to end. I'm curious to hear your thoughts and predictions. Love the podcast. Thanks."
Yeah, where the hell was IG-11? He was sitting there on the ship doing nothing.
Making tea.
He was making tea. That's what he was doing.
Making third breakfast or something.
Right.
Okay, this one is from Rima Joe. Didn't know I needed Gus Fring in the Star Wars universe, but here we are, and he was awesome. Great episode. Loved Cara Dune back in action, and loved that Gina Carino got to show more of her MMA skills. I'm so going to learn her back roll move.
Rima does Krav Maga, so she's serious.
Yeah.
Nice. Alex Baelish writes, "Oh my God, I loved how they are bringing it all together. First, I'm in love with Gina Carano. She's amazing, and Cara Dune is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters in Star Wars. That said, what a cliffhanger. Can't wait for the final episode."
Yeah. Alex Vieira, "Loved the parallels between Quill and Cara, IG-11 and Mando, as both pairs had a form of distrust between the two due to their actions in the past. Wondered how that would affect the group going forward until the possible demise of Blurg Tamer Quill. Sad to see him go if he is truly dead." Agreed.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't really mention the little fight that Quill and Cara had because he used to be Imperial and she was a rebel. Michael Darwin says, "Well, what do you know? A stormtrooper finally hit something."
Way to go.
Way to go. Okay, Alicia Stout, one word. No!
One word with a lot of O's.
With a lot of O's.
And speaking of a lot of O's, John Bucket. Oh! That was great. Part one of a two-part finale, I guess. Cool to see Mando putting his team together, and I swore out loud when all those troopers rocked up. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Now I'm off to watch Rise of Skywalker.
Heck yeah. Greg Schwamb. Now this is a cliffhanger.
Kristen Wharton says, "Best yet. It set me up to really want to know what happens next."
Steve Barr. "Next week, Mando, Cara, and Grief are annoyed by a fly while Moff Gideon sponsors the local New Republic Spice Interdiction Task Force cookout."
I think that's a Breaking Bad joke.
Yes, I know.
Okay. All right. Adam Gazali writes, "Interesting debate last week about how deliberate some of the child's actions are, and is it just acting like a baby as a form of protection? If so, some interesting questions raised with the force choke and taking control of the ship. Maybe he didn't want to go back."
Colin Baker. "Holy crap. Did you hear that? They went over the plan. According to the Talking Dead, Jason, the plan will now fail since it was discussed. Let's see how this plays out for the rest of the episode. Well, now plan number two is out in the open. And Jason was right." "You guys are doing a great job with the recap. Love the Easter egg / callback clarifications and the overall admiration for the show. Truly digging the show and the podcast. Thanks for making my commute more enjoyable."
Thank you, Colin, for writing in. He's referring to something that my normal co-host, other Jason, talks about, and that is that if a character talks about the plan openly, it's not going to work. So
yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah. I wonder if there's ever been a time where a character talked about a plan and it just went exactly the way they said.
It's just not a thing. So
Mike Sullivan says, "This one was amazing. Gathers a crew from his past adventures and episodes. Twists and turns. And anytime we get more Cara Dune and Grief Karga is a win. And to see Quill and IG-11 again was great. Question, Baby Yoda, the child, seems to have both light side and dark side force abilities. This could be very interesting. Is he a balanced embodiment of the force? force, both light and dark side. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Super powerful. Regarding the scout troopers, anyone who has been to a failed state has experienced these armed X-fighters standing around. When they offered 20 credits for Mando's helmet, I had to laugh out loud. We would often trade gear, uniform parts, and equipment with our foreign counterparts when conducting combined operations. We would also get offered money for our gear as souvenirs or see former soldiers selling their equipment as souvenirs. A very realistic scene.
Wow.
That's really interesting.
That is actually cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Veteran.
And then we have Emily Rochette. So, great episode, full of action. I really loved it. I have to say I was a little skeptical at first about one thing. It just didn't make sense to me that Mando would go back to Nevarro in such an impulsive manner. But then I thought, no, it does make sense. The previous episodes, as self-contained as they may have been, also serve the purpose of explaining this decision. They were stories about making allies, sure, but also stories of betrayal and being hunted down, and this probably justifies Mando's move. All of this must get tiring after a while. However, I still don't get why such a clever bounty hunter would go there without a better strategy to protect himself and Baby Yoda, but I loved it anyway in the end. So I'm willing to overlook this detail. Can't wait to see the next one. My prayers go to Baby Yoda in the meantime. And what's with Baby Yoda pulling a Darth Vader on Cara Dune? I suppose he will need training at some point. Mm. Also, forgot to say how much I love the soundscape, musical landscape of this show. It is truly amazing. I hope Gorison wins an award for it.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Music,
I think,
is so good.
The music is amazing. The sound design is amazing. And this is a point that I don't know if I really brought up before, but I think this episode makes the last couple better.
I agree. I totally agree.
Right? Because I had a little bit of trouble with them, but you know, now that we're seeing what was going on, and this is my bad for not like waiting to see the whole thing or the whole series as a whole, but it sets up allies and it sets up enemies. And I think Amelie points that out. And I think it's a really good point. So, you know, don't count your chickens before they hatch, maybe is the point, and wait till the end.
Unless patience. You have a podcast and you're committed to explicating everything as it comes out.
We need patience. Patience, young
There's
Padawan.
Also that, yeah.
We got two calls, one from Anwen Carver.
Hi guys, great episode this week. It was so satisfying to see some of the old characters come back, and I really loved seeing Cara Dune again. I think she's an awesome character. I loved the moment when Baby Yoda peeks down from the hatch in the ship. That was very cute. It was a really exciting episode. Heaps happened, and I love seeing Baby Yoda do the Force choke. That was pretty awesome. I don't think we've ever seen a good character do that before. Heartbroken to see Quill being killed, and interesting how they brought back IG-11. It started a bit of a conversation in our house about droids, and I thought it was really interesting how Quill was talking about bringing him back to life, or that he found him lifeless and restored his life and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, well, aren't droids all kind of lifeless? And it started a discussion between me and my husband about droids and whether they have life or whether they have a soul. And I don't think they have souls. I think they have a personality, and they have loyalties based on their programming or based on maybe their experience. But I don't think they have a soul as such. I'd be really interested to hear what you guys think about that. Only one episode to go. Can't wait to see how it pans out. But I love that everything's kind of come back to the beginning. I think that IG-11 is going to swoop in and save the day and completely change Mando's mind about droids. And that would be a nice bit of character development for him. And be interesting to see how they set up for the next season. Thanks, guys. Have a wonderful Christmas and New Year. And enjoy Skywalker. Bye.
Thanks.
I think, you know, it depends on how complicated their, you know, neural nets or whatever are. But basically, personally, I think that human beings are just really complicated machines, biological machines.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so I think it's possible, you know, with droids, it's easier to know how to reprogram them because they have interfaces and everything. But I think it's potential that they have actual emotions. They seem to.
Yeah.
And so to me, that means that's the same thing as a soul.
If we allow them to.
Right.
I like the idea of IG-11 swooping in and changing his perspective. I don't think I really thought of that, you know, from a story standpoint. But,
right.
You know, that
could be interesting, too.
Yeah, it could be.
He doesn't have to be malevolent to make it interesting.
Sure.
Which is what I was thinking before. And then, of course, we got our weekly call from Steve Brown.
Hey, guys. It's Steve, and this is for The Reckoning, Mandalorian Chapter 7. Man, really, really good episode. I love that fight scene between Gina Carano and the alien with that tether between them and getting a chance to see her in that hand-to-hand. And then we get to see the child use the force choking. I thought was, again, just great. And definitely, it was wonderful seeing Nick Nolte again, and so sad how it ended. But he obviously knew something about the child, whether he knew, I definitely think he was going to say, like, he knew what he was doing, that it was the force he was using or something like that, or that he was some sort of Jedi. And just so many things about this episode. Let me see if I can break it down into just three quick ones. First, I mean, I think all of us knew from the moment Carl Weathers sent him that message that it was going to be a trap. But I loved the turnaround there for when the child heals him and he goes after that. I couldn't go through with it. We can't let the Imperials have this child. And of course, then seeing Werner Herzog again was just really cool. And the whole idea of I loved Mando gathering his friends, the people that he does trust. To take with him and seeing Nick Nolte again, obviously, and like I already said, so sad that cliffhanger ending. And I wonder if there is some sort of tie-in to Rise of Skywalker. I can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts on that as well. I'm going to see it Friday, and I may send in a voicemail after this to talk about it. All right. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Yeah, we want to hear what people thought of that. Steve and anyone else, send in your voicemail or write us and let us know if you got a chance to see Star Wars Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Steve reminded me of something about that that fight with Cara Dune at the beginning where she was tethered to the guy. You know, I think it's the first time I've seen a fight like that where pelvic thrusts might have an impact on the outcome of the fight because of the way they were attached together.
How convenient.
Yes.
Pelvic. Like that word.
Oh, man. All right.
Sorry.
Thanks. No, you're right on point.
Yeah.
Anyone, thanks for writing in, everybody, and calling and everything. Totally cool. I think that was the most feedback we've gotten so far. So that's awesome.
Awesome.
What's going on next week?
Next week, Chapter 8, The Mandalorian comes face to face with an unexpected enemy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Boba Fett.
Yeah. Unexpected. So it's someone we haven't seen yet, right?
Yeah. You know who I would least expect? Mm. Mickey Mouse.
I don't know. He has a habit of appearing in the background a lot.
It is Disney, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
This is directed by Taika Waititi and written by Jon Favreau.
Sweet.
That's going to be good, man. I think the season finale is going to be awesome. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. So let's all ratchet down our expectations just so we don't.
Right. A little bit. A little bit.
It's probably not going to be that good.
I have been known to get overexcited for things like this, so I'm going to try to keep it in check.
It's hard. Yeah, man. I think it's going to be good, but we'll see. Okay, now we're going to do just a quick segment where we talk about what we thought about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, which we've all seen and we've all, I think, managed not to talk about at all until right now.
Yep. This very moment.
So
Rich, you managed to get out to it today?
Yeah, I did.
Some discussion of whether, good.
Yeah, awesome. Eric and I went and saw it last night, actually. Yeah, so. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
We got to see it at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about what you thought after?
Not too really. Much.
No, yeah. Just completely silent?
I got a burning question. Can I ask my question? I got a burning question. I want to ask my question. Let me ask my question.
Go.
Did anybody see any references to The Mandalorian?
I didn't. I mean,
I didn't
there
either.
Was force healing. You know,
yeah, force the force healing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we're going to be spoiling this movie.
Yes.
Why don't we talk, say whether we liked it or not, in case anybody's listening who hasn't seen it, and then we'll say skip to the next section and spoil it. So,
okay.
Did right. you guys like it, Chris?
Yes, I liked it quite a bit. I did.
What about you, Eric?
I had fun. I had fun with it, for sure.
Yes, I enjoyed it immensely.
I thought it was pretty horrible.
What?
And I'm sorry it happened.
Oh, man.
And there were some good moments, for sure. But, you know, I think no one listening to this should probably listen to me. You should listen to the other three guys. Okay, now, any spoilers, anything you guys want to mention, you know, just really uninformed, but anything that you want to talk about it?
Interrupting here as I'm editing, laying here in bed, getting ready to put this episode out. I just want to make it super clear that from this point on, we will be talking about spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want to be spoiled on it, then you should skip ahead to the next section or just, you know, stop listening right now. Okay. Right, Bodhi?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I enjoyed it a lot because, well, I enjoyed it. You know what? My enjoyment increased as I was watching it. At the very beginning, you know how they kind of rushed through it and they were like just getting through all the preliminary information you needed for the plot. I was just kind of like, really? Is this what it's going to be like? And then after Chewie gets captured, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then it, from there, you know, all the way until the end when Palpatine became, you know, biologically viable, you know, taking the life force from the two Jedis, I was like, hey, this is getting really good. I really liked it. I was well entertained. My guidelines for enjoying a movie is if I'm entertained, I was entertained.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know what? I was thinking about it coming out of this movie, and I realized that I may have a difficult time providing an objective opinion on Star Wars movies because they've been a part of my life for so long, you know, basically since day one. And I think I react to them in a little more visceral and impulsive way, for better or worse. But like, I have trouble really taking an objective perspective on them. And a couple of weeks ago, Jason, you asked, you know, what our least favorite Star Wars movie is. And not really considering the prequels at the time, to be honest, I said that Rogue One was my least favorite, but I actually rewatched that since then. And it was on rewatch. I thought it was really, really great, to be
honest.
That's
awesome.
It's
awesome.
I love Rogue One too.
I did.
Yeah.
Too.
And I realized that my original reaction to it was just, this doesn't feel like Star Wars to me in the way that I want Star Wars to feel. But once I had some space from it, I could sort of get on board with the fact that this was just a really good movie.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is I don't totally trust my initial opinion on Star Wars movies. However, I did really like The Rise of Skywalker. And I think the main criticism I can put against it is that it felt rushed. It felt really fast. There was a lot going on. There was probably two or three movies worth of stuff in this one film, but I still was able to kind of love what I was watching, and I just had a really good time with it. You know, I laughed, I cried, I was surprised, and I was entertained by the whole thing. And to me, it felt like a Star Wars movie, at least one within the Skywalker saga, which is what I was going for. So, you know, I can't say that I disliked it really at all.
Yeah, I thought it was the best of the three.
Of the three,
well,
the three new ones.
If I had to rank them, I still put The Force Awakens, of the three new ones, I mean, I still put The Force Awakens at number one, this one at number two, and The Last Jedi at number three of the three new ones.
What do you got to say?
So I had fun with it. The third act was definitely, you know, most exciting, and it did kind of, It went a little slow for me. I mean, there was a lot going on, but kind of like Rich, I was like, okay, is this where we're going? I did have some criticism. I think the big reveal about Ray wasn't as powerful as I was expecting it to be. Maybe my expectations were a little too high, but you know, I was kind of expecting a "I am your father" kind of thing, and I didn't quite feel it.
"I am your granddaughter."
Right, "I am your granddaughter." That's how it should have been, right?
That would be funny if someone actually had that. "I am your granddaughter." No,
no, that's not true. That's impossible. But I had fun with it, you know. I mean, seeing those characters and just like you, Chris, you know, growing up, Star Wars was such a big thing in my life. I mean, it was I saw the movie on the first day with my mom, and it's been a part of my life ever since. So sometimes I too can be a little tainted. But I had fun with it, and
right? And
that was kind of my first take.
Sure. Like, I can kind of watch this, and I can feel the exuberance that J.J. Abrams brings to it. Like, whether the movie is perfect or not, or even really good or not, like, I can kind of feel his love
feel
for
his
it,
love.
To be honest
yeah.
with you. I can feel the joy he gets making these movies and putting them out for all of us, right? And J.J. Abrams is a Star Wars traditionalist, right? Like, Rian Johnson with the last one did some things that were really different, and I'm actually okay with that too. You know, I say that's my third favorite of this trilogy, but I still liked it quite a bit, and I think he did some really interesting things. I think J.J. wasn't totally on board, and he kind of tried to revert things back to what he feels Star Wars is, but I'm one of the few people. So, you know, of all the podcasts and reviews I've read that are kind of okay with both approaches to Star Wars, and lots of other people aren't, it seems like. So that's the real thing here, that like Star Wars for me can be a lot of different things. And Rian Johnson did some good stuff, and J.J. Abrams has done some good stuff, and I kind of like all of it.
Okay, wait, before Jason launches, I want to say that I did have a small complaint about this movie, and that was that Luke Skywalker wasn't in it enough. I think J.J. Abrams tried his hardest to make up for what Rian Johnson did, but I wanted to see more Luke Skywalker. But, you know, that's me. He was my childhood hero.
That was your one big complaint, though.
That was my only complaint. Right. Other than that, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even really want to go into details because...
All right, know, everyone, after, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Like, if you'd like. After podcasting about Fear, you know, for an extra half season longer than I really thought I should, but the listeners said, "We want you to," and I was just raking it over the coals. I'm like, no, this isn't why I podcast. I like to celebrate the things that I'm into. So, and I really, really wasn't into this movie, and I don't even want to go into it. I think we should just leave it. If you guys are curious, let me know.
No, tell us why, though.
I'll tell you guys why after, but I don't even think I'm going to podcast about it. We've got Mr. Blog coming in to guest host, so I think I'll leave it to you guys. Yep.
That kind of makes me sad a little bit, Jason. I want you to love this movie. And,
you're talking about the two methods, being a traditionalist or trying new things. And I do typically tend to come down more on the side of trying new things, although I want anything Star Wars to feel Star Wars-y. So it's sort of this amorphous thing. But as far as being a traditionalist, I think Jon Favreau is a traditionalist. I mean, he is doing some new things, but it really feels like he's respecting Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And for me, J.J. Abrams is just, I always feel with his stuff that he's going through the motions. He's pushing our nostalgia buttons in ways that don't really make sense for the plot. And he just puts things in there, whether they make sense or not, just because he thinks that we're going to get a thrill out of it. And for me, it has to follow it with the story and the characters. And I just don't buy it. I feel insulted when I'm watching, and I'm just, the more of J.J. Abrams stuff that I watch, the more I just feel like, no, this, I'm not on in the same wavelength with this guy. Uh-oh. And I think it looks amazing, and the tone, I mean, it feels like the excitement level I feel is there, but just the storytelling, like the look of some of that stuff when Palpatine shot his electricity up into the big bunch of ships was incredible to look at, but the storytelling, I'm not buying it. And if it doesn't, something doesn't feel on a level to me, then I'm just not into it.
Okay.
That's so funny because
we got a little bit.
I was listening, Chris. I listened to another review of it. And, one of the people on that podcast said that, you know, J.J. Abrams is clearly a guy who can start good stories, but doesn't know how to finish them.
He said that too. Abrams said that himself.
Oh, he said that but I didn't, himself.
Yeah, Force Awakens, I had a lot of complaints about, and this movie just really made that even more apparent to me, way, way, way more. And it made me like the other two movies even less. Like you were saying, this episode of Mandalorian made you like the other episodes more. This movie just made me feel like the whole trilogy was a big mistake.
Damn.
Oh, God. That makes me so sad.
I'm
because
sorry.
I know that's okay because it makes me feel like I know you wanted this. Like, I want you to love this, and I know you wanted to love it, and I'm kind of sad that you don't, but I don't know. I thought the final scene, I mean, we're spoiling things. I'm not going to actually say it, but you know, everyone knows what she's going to say at the end there, the final word of the movie.
Yeah.
But I loved it. Like I pretty much broke down and was like, this is the best thing I can imagine. And,
happy.
And I walked out of there going like, man, that felt so good. And I'm bummed that you didn't like it.
Well, I'm happy that you did. Like, I can hear the excitement in all you guys' voices. So that's awesome. And hey, not everything works out. We have The Mandalorian. I seriously do love this show. And I'm so happy with all the new shows that popped up recently. His Dark Materials, Watchmen, few Witchers coming out. And I was trying to figure out which one to podcast on because I just wanted to kind of pick one. And I'm like, man, I hit the jackpot. I picked the right one. I picked the right co-hosts. And I'm really happy to be podcasting on it and that we like it so much. So there's that.
Yeah,
that's good. There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, that is our show. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thanks for coming on, Eric.
Yay,
it was super fun to have you on. Yeah,
awesome.
Eric was super nervous, but
I was.
I think it turned out all right. I told him if I cleared my throat a lot, that meant he was messing up.
I didn't hear what.
I went back and listened to the Walking Dead cast top five people that I would want with me in the zombie apocalypse because I had said I'd put Gina Carano on there, but it turned out, I guess she was a runner-up because there was some sexy soccer player, a sexy hockey player, and Richard was on there.
Whoa!
I'm like, Richard knows how to do a lot of stuff.
And I'm sexy. Right.
I was surprised. I'm like, oh, yeah. Anyway, just thought you'd want an update on that.
Right on.
Nice.
If you want to write in a recorded message and send it in, we got one more episode left in season one and then covering Rise of Skywalker after that. You can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram @housepodcastica.
You can hear Chris on the Talking Dead podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And you can find Jason's other podcast at podcastica.com.
And I also wanted to mention real quick, I have a Patreon. I don't really talk about it a lot on this podcast, but I thought I'd mention it just because Richard is going to be on our monthly call-in show this month. It's December 30th. We'll talk about The Mandalorian. We'll talk about our friendship since we've known each other for so long and a bunch of other pop culture stuff. You can ask us questions on there live and get involved in the conversation if you want, or you can just listen. Chris, Eric, you guys are more than welcome to join in too.
Cool.
If anybody cool. wants to hear that or get involved, just pledge any amount to my Patreon. That's at patreon.com/JasonandKaren. You can even just pledge for 1 month if you want, just to hear that call. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
I have spoken.
We're going to get hate mail.